Blog Talk Radio.
Our lives to this sport. We do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We attitude. We moody, and we go into that fight and to land on the line.
Marshall, I'm Chris, and we're here to discuss and banter and predict everything that is college basketball. And obviously, we're knee-deep, scratch that. We're neck-deep into this NCAA tournament. It's been a fun, eventful, to say the least, tournament. Got a lot of first-time or very rare type of stats thrown at us, that's for sure. Obviously, we will start with recap from the last several days, 4 days, right? We'll break down some of the Sweet 16 games. I mean, we're not going to spend too much time on the blowouts, but there were plenty of interesting Sweet 16 games. Of course, we'll talk about what happened on Saturday and Sunday in the Elite Eight games as well. Then we'll, you know, take a look at the Final Four coming up this weekend on Saturday. We'll break down the two games, and then we'll do like we did the last 2 weeks. We'll actually talk about Monday's game, how we see it, and who we think is going to win the championship for 2017-18 season in general. So lots to talk about. Of course, we will have an NBA segment to close the show. We talked about injuries last week for Golden State. And it didn't get any better, that's for damn sure. So we'll talk a little NBA. By the way, if this is your first time listening to the College Ball Show, we call it the College Ball Show because we start with college football in late August. And we run that all the way till early January to the national title game. Then we go to college basketball, which obviously, like I mentioned, we're neck deep in the college basketball. We take it all the way to the national title game. We take a short break, not long at all, maybe a little over a week, something like that. We kind of just time it out as good as we can. But then we go to the NBA playoffs. Since we're on college basketball anyway, a lot of people, it carries over. So we go to the NBA playoffs. Of course, we take that April, May, June, all the way through the finals. And then our last two shows of the year, one will be an NBA draft, which, you know, obviously the actual draft, including trades, which I think there is a possibility we could see some movement, some interesting stuff. And then the last show is early July, the NBA free agency show. So looking forward to that. But that's like years away considering what we got going on right now. And if this is your first time listening to the show, as I mentioned, we are available right here on blogtalkradio.com/RopeItUpRadio. We stream it live and archive it here. It's kind of the headquarters, but it's available underneath the Rope It Up Radio podcast at iTunes, aka Apple Podcasts. Player FM is another great source. Stitcher, Spreaker, basically anywhere you listen to podcasts, Rope It Up Radio podcast, which includes the College Ball Show, which you're listening to right now, is available all over the place, including the Grueling Truth .net. They also have the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network. It's available at all the, you know, all the venues, the outlets, I should say, including iHeartRadio. If you listen to iHeartRadio or you're into that, we're there as well. That's the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network. You can listen to it at the gruelingtruth.net. That's the gruelingtruth.net. It's football, basketball, boxing, baseball, all sorts of stuff. TheGruelingTruth.net, they got a great sponsor over there, MyBookie.ag. That's MyBookie.ag. So, recap from the weekend. We'll take a look at what is in store for this weekend and Monday included. We'll go ahead and pick the finals. And then, of course, some NBA action as well we'll pick up with. But just kind of going over with a not really a fine-tooth comb or nothing, just kind of breezing through some of these games because, you know, there wasn't that many tight games that opening. Well, there was two tight games, I should say, two out of the four. Michigan pretty much – well, not pretty much. They did steamroll A&M 99-72. Jesus criminy. And Florida State handled Gonzaga 75-60. The two interesting games were, of course, Nevada and Loyola Chicago. Now, Loyola Chicago, you know, ended up getting past that test 69-68. And then we'll take a little Kansas State in Kentucky as well. That'll be something that we can take a look at. And as far as Friday games, Nova really didn't have that many problems with West Virginia. Really, you know. Texas Tech kind of pulled away from Purdue after a while, although it was a competitive game for a little bit. Clemson hung around against KU. They got the job done. Of course, we know they got the job done because they're going to the Final Four, 80-76. And Duke and Syracuse, really tight game there, 69-65. So, you know, obviously Loyola Chicago just fits the role perfectly as the Cinderella story, clearly. It's just a fun story. Most people now know about the, what is it, 98-year-old nun? Is it 98 or 95? I keep forgetting. I'm going to go ahead and bring in Marshall here in just a second as well. But, I mean, a great story. And they've had some, you know, pretty damn tight games, to say the least, just getting here. But that Kentucky, I'm going to kind of focus a little bit on that Kentucky-Kansas State game. I mentioned that Loyola-Nevada game. So by defeating Nevada at the time, the three tournament wins by a combined 4 points is only the second time that somebody, you know, got to the Elite Eight with that stretch. It's pretty crazy. And Michigan now has been to three Elite Eights in the last 6 years. So something, you know, a lot of people are kind of pointing to them. And God, when you look at Michigan too, there was a stat early in that A&M game. In fact, I took a picture of it. 33-12, 8 minutes left in the first half. They're up 33-12. Game's over. And at that time, they made 7 threes. Now, that's pretty impressive, 11 minutes into the game. A little over 11 minutes in the game. But it was by 7 different players. Like, that's a tough guard, to say the least. That is a tough-ass guard. But Loyola, man, they just keep hitting the right shots. They play good defense. They just come up big, man, and that crowd goes nuts. Obviously, you know, riding – well, I'm going to pause that whole comment. I'm gonna stop what I was about to say because it's just wrong is what I was going to say. Anyway, if you look at that Kentucky-Kansas State game, Kansas State got such a good start to that game. It was like – what was it, 11-1 or 13-1 right away? Going into that Sweet 16 game, Kentucky had won 8 straight Sweet 16s. Their last loss was like Maryland back in 02, if I recall the stat. Yep. And they just jumped on them. It was so many turnovers from Kentucky. And it's like that youth kind of showed up, I guess, in the wrong way. Early going, they're down. I mean, they had more turnovers than field goals for quite a bit of time in that game. And even both of them by the end of the half, almost end of the half, there was 12 field goals made with 12 turnovers. So it was really, really heavy turnover game. Now, Kentucky really got into it pretty quick in the second half. I think they take their first lead by a point, 36-35, a couple of minutes in. So they definitely, like, were right there with them. But a difference maker in that second half, there was, like, 2 3-minute spurts where it'd be like a 12-2 run, and next thing you know, they're up by 7, and you're thinking, wow, this is not going good. And the points off turnovers was so, so key. And Snead, you know, Snead was just on fire for Kansas State, too. I wanted to bring him up. And it looked like, all right, they're going to pull away now. But Kentucky, they had a run, and it was about a 4 or 5 minute run, but with under 4 to play, they took their first lead in quite some time. So I really thought, okay, Kentucky's turned it on. Here we go. It's just a matter of nope, they lost. So that one for me was probably the biggest surprise, that Kansas State, Kentucky had been playing so good. Obviously, they have the talent, but that one kind of got to me pretty early. As far as Nova, just a little quick stat from them. First program in NCAA history to win 32-plus games in 4 straight seasons. And they pretty much rolled through West Virginia in the second half anyway. I mean, it was a competitive game, don't get me wrong. But, yeah, it's pretty crazy. Here's another stat real quick. I'm going to give it to you, Marshall, here. 3 teams seeded 9 or lower reached the Elite Eight for the first time. Obviously, Loyola Chicago, Kansas State, and Florida State as well. So that's in obviously that 9 and 11, the lowest combined seeds in Elite Eight matchup history. So obviously, and speaking of turnovers, that's probably one of the reasons why West Virginia lost that game. They did go cold in spurts, and it was kind of a spurty back and forth game. 10-0 runs. You know, and actually what really cleaned it out was, I got this marked down here, but 76-66 with about 5 minutes left in the game. Villanova up on West Virginia, 22-6 run over a 5:34 mark. So that's basically what finished them, you know. I'm going to go ahead and bring it over to Marshall here. What's going on, Marshall? How you doing, man?
I'm doing good, just at home, just got some hockey and basketball on. I got I saw J.J. Redick get posterized just like a minute ago, so that made me smile. Murray on the Nuggets just like embarrassed him. So anytime a Duke player gets embarrassed, it's always a positive. And I actually got some interesting takes on them. We'll get to that in a little bit. I agree with you on K-State. For all the games I watched this year, to me, they were one of the best overall team defenses in the country. Now, they maybe didn't have the overall skill of some teams, like just for like NBA talent or whatever, but as a team defensively, that team was just solid from the core. Because offensively, they weren't really flashy. But there was a point where I believe, if my number's right, remember from my head, I believe Kentucky had 7 dribbling turnovers just over midway through the second half. And there were so many times where Kentucky's guards were simply, I wouldn't even say careless with the basketball, but K-State, every time they drove to the lane, the ball was going the other way in a second. So I give K-State's defense a ton of credit. They didn't miss any layups, which is a point I'll get to in a little bit on someone else. And I also give K-State credit because that was a freaking road game. I mean, say what you want about neutral sites in the tournament, and I know that game wasn't at Lexington, but when K-State made their runs, I mean, that arena had to be 80% Kentucky, maybe 10% regular people paying for tickets, and 10% K-State. But you would have thought it was at Lexington, but even in a bigger arena. So to kind of take the nerve off that, which, you know, normally it's not quite a huge disadvantage, but when the camera would zoom out, it's like, oh, my God, is that place all Kentucky fans are going nuts? I think that complements K-State even more. So, obviously, they're not still alive today, but that was a great, impressive win for them on the Thursday-Friday slate. And Clemson actually, versus Kansas, they didn't play awful. I mean, they kind of dug themselves into a hole, and it seemed like Chris after they got about down 10 in the first half, it kind of went from 10 back to 5, went from 10 down to 5, back to 10, back to 5 almost the whole way. So I would say Clemson, for a team that lost their second best player midway through the season, actually had a pretty damn good season. If you're a Clemson fan, maybe you're praying for an upset. But, I mean, for a team that wasn't really expected much and didn't get a whole lot of news from the ACC this year, that's a pretty good run to make the Sweet 16, get bounced out by a one, but put up a respectable, honorable fight. That wasn't bad at all. But, yeah, I compliment K-State because, man, dude, I mean, championship games, or I should say March Madness is tough enough, but when you got to walk into, I mean, basically a Kentucky home stadium, that was cool. That was a sweet win. And I'll throw it back to you before we get to the weekend, but Loyola, what a cool story. I know that there's people that are saying, like, oh, well, the ratings are not going to be that good, and, you know, you always want to see the blue bloods there and you want to see the best teams. It's like, dude, if your team has earned it, then, you know, honestly, I don't care. I want to see the teams that have done it. And their story, I mean, winning four games or three games by 4 points, it's like that team's done everything possible. Okay, so maybe we won't see the best basketball game from them when they play Michigan. Maybe they get beat by 30. Now, I doubt it. But just talk about how people are saying, oh, you know, I don't want Loyal there. And, dude, whatever. You know, it's normally the Cinderella story is fun for the weekend. People expect those teams to fade away. Well, they didn't fade away, and you can't say they're not playing that great of basketball, fluke basketball, because they destroyed the team that beat Kentucky. And I just saw on ESPN today, Stephen A. Smith on the main page, just like, well, I don't want Loyola to be in the national title game because that'd be, you know, they shouldn't be there. They're not a good enough team. It's like, well, dude, you're an idiot. Like, they're in the Final Four because they've won four games and they've looked damn good doing it. So I kind of hate some of this hype about, the Cinderella story needs to end. Bad for ratings. It's like, well, dude, shut up. But let's just make it a Sweet 16 tournament every year, Chris, where all we have is top-ranked teams from the best conferences. And let's just get rid of the other, you know, 30-some-odd teams. And let's just have it be Kansas, Kentucky, Duke, Carolina every year. It's like, when moments like this happen, enjoy it and give the team credit, other than bitch about how the ratings might go down or this game won't be that good. It's like, no, tip my hat to them. They've done all they deserve, and I'm happy to see Loyola get there, and they have just as good of a chance as winning as anyone else does, Chris.
Well, I kind of disagree with you there, that part, that they have just as good as chance.
Well,
I
think they're going to win their first one.
I wouldn't bet it, I'm saying. Yeah, but do you think they have good as chances? So if you take all four teams, they have just as good as chances as Nova and Kansas, you think?
I wouldn't go that far, but they don't got to be Nova and
Kansas. But
you
did. You did
go
that far. You did go that far, Marshall. You said it. I'm just repeating it and asking the question again. So you
take
it back.
They're not the favorite in Vegas right now, but they're not an underdog that's like 20-1.
I wonder what the odds are. I wouldn't be shocked.
Now you mentioned it, I should have looked. But, yeah, we'll see. But, I mean, you know, for the miracle run to keep going, I'm not going to say, you know, that they're there without a fighting cause. So, I mean, I get, you know, obviously Kansas and Villanova are much better teams. But, you know, like, just like hell, Butler. I mean, I bet there were some people going back years ago that thought, well, what's Butler doing here? And they were a half-court shot away with Gordon Hayward bouncing off the rim to win the national title against Duke. So at some point, the fantasy run is going, and it's like, well, I'm not going to say Loyola doesn't got a shot this year.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about the Butler thing, but, yeah, I hear what you're saying. I'm happy they're in. I could care less about, you know, if it doesn't – the ratings and whatnot. I do understand, though – the thought of not even a Cinderella when there's just an outside team. It could be a 7 seed from a power five, or maybe just a more well-known conference or whatever, that's just not highly seeded or whatever. And they didn't have a great season or whatever, but you do tend to get to this spot. I mean, usually these type of teams are eliminated by now, of course. And sometimes in the Sweet 16, or the Elite Eight, you can have a blowout because of that. You're like, oh, well, this isn't really that good of a matchup. So I can understand people's thought process on that. I get that as far as competitiveness, potentially, because we have seen it plenty of times. Like I said, usually it's in the Sweet 16 or the Elite Eight, maybe. Sometimes it's the Final Four. It's very rare, but I guess you feel better if it's a number, whatever, 7 or 8 or whatever the hell UConn was when they won it. I think it was 7, because you know UConn, man. So you know UConn. You know the team. You know the players. So it's a little different, but, yeah, I hear you. I mean, I guess the only thing I would worry about is that competitiveness in a sense of will we get a straight-up good game? Well, you could, it doesn't mean – just because it is good, like, doesn't mean that Nova Kansas game is going to be the best game of the year. You know, we could get a blowout on that side, too. You never know. So I understand from that point. I understand it from that point, you know, as far as, God, I hope they don't get here. And then they got 6 days to scout them or 5 days to scout them. And now it's not going to be as interesting or whatever. But as far as, you know, they shouldn't be here, or I don't want them there, or kind of take something out of it. I disagree, man. That is the whole point of this tournament. That's the fun part. We just generally don't get it, you know, all the way there. Plus, they're balling right now. I mean, they look really good. I'm not going to say great, though, because they did have a bunch of, you know, 1 and 2 point victories. So they're getting by, but they weren't favored to win those games. So, although I did see it. Go ahead.
So you made a perfect point. Remember, and this just hit me when you said that, like, well, there's no guarantee that Kansas-Nova will be a good game. I remember, speaking of Nova, who I got etched in my damn memory, the year they played Carolina and they had that dagger buzzer beater win, I remember when they played in the Final Four before they played us against Oklahoma, wasn't that like almost like a 40-point beatdown? I don't remember what it was, but I remember Villanova played Oklahoma, and I think Oklahoma basically wanted to go home, Chris, but 10 minutes in that game, if memory serves, I think they probably beat him by an easy 30. Or that game was like Buddy Hield was like, oh, dude, this might hurt the stock. I mean, that was just a thrashing. So as you said, we could easily get a more entertaining Loyola-Michigan game than K-State Nova, because even sometimes the top dogs, I mean, Duke Kansas turned out to be good yesterday, but that Villanova-Oklahoma, and that's just from straight-up memory. I remember that game was just an absolute murdering, Chris. So, you never quite know what to expect when we get to the Final Four.
95-51 is what it was.
God, holy! I shot under with 40. I just remember watching that game. And
44
I remember
freaking
asking
points.
I remember asking
game,
a buddy.
I didn't remember it was that bad. Holy shit! When you brought it up and said, "Yeah, you're right. That was an easy win." I totally had spaced that it was that bad. Holy crap! That's Virginia probably beat 12 teams scoring 44 points. Holy shit. I forgot about that.
I remember asking a buddy, I'm like, dude, do we want Nova or Oklahoma? And we were kind of going back and forth. And once that game started, I'm like, well, shit, we're playing Nova. There's no debate. Forget about Oklahoma. Carolina, if we win, is playing Nova, period. Yeah, needless to say,
yeah, I guess
44, 45 point win. You never know, Chris. You never know.
So, truly, anything can happen any which way, especially, you know, when you have that 5 days, you know, that
mm-hmm,
is key
mm-hmm.
To scout, you know what I mean? That especially when you're dealing with high-profile coaches, which we are. Either way, though, actually just was messing around with something. Got a little – okay, there we go. Bringing it to the weekend, though. Not a good game unless you're, you know, a loyal Chicago fan. You're like, hell
sure.
Yeah, 78-62. They just walloped them, and it felt kind of like that from the start. It was like, okay, yeah, this is – they're keeping that trend, man. They are playing really, really well. Now, that Florida State-Miami game – or Miami – Florida State-Michigan game, see, it comes off the tongue. It just happens.
Wide left.
Yeah. So Florida State was playing damn good in this game for quite some time. And I remember, seeing, like, all right, this isn't going to be a blow because Michigan had, you know, had jumped on some other teams. And he thought, okay, this isn't going to be a blowout. And I'm looking at it in the second half, and Michigan kind of jumped ahead by, actually, let me see what it was, 10 points. It was like a 11-0 run. And Florida State, once, you know, kind of would go gaps without getting enough field goals or a field goal. I think there was a six-minute stretch where they had – I mean, they were getting to the line, so that helped them a lot, but they just could not hit. But the thing is, I mean, Michigan from the three-point line, they went 14 to 24 against A&M, obviously, you know, a huge blowout. But they, at this time, with 6 minutes left in the game, and now it's 45 to 42, Florida State's gotten back into the game. They're 3 of 21. I mean, they just couldn't hit the shots they needed to just basically, like, put their foot down on the game. And that's the kind of how I felt about it. And next thing you know, Florida State's within striking range. And then they're all the way in striking range, obviously. And the game starts melting down all the way, right? And there was a moment where, was it 9 or 11 seconds left or something, and Florida State decided not to take another or not to foul again because they had done it a couple of times. And I guess the coach, who deserves credit for what he's done at Florida State, they got to an Elite Eight. They hadn't been there since, I think, 92. Was that Charlie Ward time? I don't remember.
It sounds around that time, yeah.
But and they've, you know, they made, I think they made a Sweet 16 in 2011 or something like that. So getting their Sweet 16, taking that next step to an Elite Eight after having a subpar year for them, like in the conference anyway, it's a solid accomplishment. He's done pretty damn well. If he's the most winning coach there, you know, no doubt about it. But a lot of people started talking about, just because the math didn't work or wasn't working for you, I guess you could say, when you had tried to fall and do the free throw game, I mean, that's your only hope at that point. You got to fall them. But there was about 9 or 11 seconds left, and it seemed like they could clearly try to fall again and just to see if something were to happen. And obviously, you know, You gotta do it. You gotta at least try to do it. We could sit there, and a lot of people like to add up stuff without it happening and say, "Well, that cost them the game." It wasn't cost them the game. So, and he even admitted that he was just too feisty and emotional, basically caught up in his emotions after the game when he was kind of not letting the reporter clearly ask the question or kind of break it down the question. He said, well, what was the score at that time? How much time? We weren't going to win, you know, that type of thing. And when they clearly could have at least just fouled one more time. So I think that was a mistake, not to say that that cost him the game, because it didn't. He is right. It didn't cost him the game. But you got to at least foul one more time. But other than that, it was like a grinded-out defensive game. And that's the thing with Michigan, man. They can grind you out, and they score in spurts. They got two guys that can get off the dribble, and they got like a leader, in a sense, who didn't play his best game. They still managed to get it done. What'd you think about that game? Because that was one of the tighter – well, that was the tighter game on Saturday. And then obviously Sunday. Well, let's talk about that, then we'll clear up Sunday real quick.
Yeah, you know, I was just impressed with Florida State making the run they did. I mean, last year their team had three NBA players on it, and this is the year that Hamilton makes the run, you know. So I thought that they exceeded expectations. We talk about how a K-State fan should be proud, a Florida State fan should be super proud, because, they really had no business coming back beating Xavier. So,
yeah,
Yeah, I mean, what more can you really ask for? And yeah, you know, when you got to put stuff in perspective, only one team does cut down the net, but that doesn't mean that as a fan base you got to be frustrated with how your team performs. I mean, as a loyal Chicago fan, I mean, no matter what happens, even if you have a Villanova-Oklahoma replay, like, dude, you made the Final Four,
right?
Like, and, you know, so
It's already written in stone by that time. You know, it's a done deal.
Yeah.
You've had a great season. And probably the best season in Loyola Chicago history.
And what we're seeing, and part of what, you know, Florida State ran into is a Michigan team that, you know, they won the Big Ten Conference, and they're on a run. They're kind of like pulling a UConn, you know, like when Kemba Walker. And at sometimes when a team wins too many games in a row, you know, you can say they get tired factor, or you get the reverse opposite factor, you know, because when UConn made their run, I think they played all 5 days in the Big East, and they went on 20, you know, so. I think the momentum of Michigan playing, and, you know, as you mentioned, Wagner didn't have his best game, and they still find a way to win. I just got to give him credit, because, I mean, I watched Michigan play during the season, and, you know, they weren't a bad team, but, I mean, I watched them play against Texas during the middle of the year, and I was like, you know, if you were to say that the team you saw that night was a team in the Final Four, I would have been like, dude, their half-court offense sometimes has no rhythm, and defensively it's like, can they really guard bigs? You know, and that was kind of my thoughts in the year. But, I mean, to beat Florida State, you have to guard big. So it seems like every guy Florida State has, Chris, is 6'11 or 7 foot and can dunk and block any shot possible. So credit to Michigan. Florida State's, I mean, season, you got to say it was incredibly successful. And Michigan's found a way to keep it going. I mean, that momentum from winning the Big Ten Conference tournament has maybe even proven more than what we thought.
Yeah, and maybe getting that little rest, you know, because they didn't have a tough game out the jump to be able to, you know, get the rust off. I think that's something that will be key.
Sure.
Although I don't, you know, I guess just because why not? In 5 years, I could see the forces that, you know, be, the powers that be, I should say, that they'll probably do that New York thing again in 5 years or something like that. But,
yeah,
we were wondering how that was going to take place. But, yeah, they defend, man. They defend very well. Number one defensive team in the Big Ten. And that is something that the Big Ten's known for, obviously. As far as Sunday, Nova, you know, Texas Tech hung around. It felt like Nova was, I guess I wouldn't say in charge of the game, but I never felt that Texas Tech was going to win the game. It just didn't feel that way to me personally. But they made it a game, and they got into it and all that. Neither team shot that well. It was a defensive grind, that's for sure. Nova did end up getting it done 71-59. That's probably their only weakness is three-point shooting. And when they went through that struggle of like three games and four nights, or three out of four they had lost, I think it was two in a row and three out of four they lost, something like that, they had struggled mightily from the three-point line. Now, you know, Texas Tech did too. I think they shot like 5 of 21 or something like that. So I kind of feel like it's – I mean, we can get into it in a second, but it kind of feels like it's Nova's tourney to win. If they play right, obviously, and maybe not even A-plus game or anything like that, because they truly, I didn't think they actually had their A game per se, but they hit you with so many different guys, and they got the leadership, and they got guys that were role players on teams that went deep in the tournament, and now they're the guys, and whenever you have that, that's a pretty big deal. Now, as far as Duke and Kansas, I almost said Kentucky, Duke and Kansas, once again, I know you got this on your DVR. Marshall, a big, big-time North Carolina fan, so you know he's got to love this matchup. Kansas against Duke, he's got it on his DVR. He literally is going to keep it there. He's going to watch every month in the off season, just because he's a big fan of these teams. But heading into this Elite Eight, Kansas had been there, let's see, 10 times in the last 17 seasons. That's the most in the NCAA since 2002. 10 out of the last 17 times they've been to the Elite Eight. Huh. I didn't know that. And it's funny because Nova, they had been – I think that they were due for a bad three-point shot game, because they had – their first three games, they set an all-time record. 44 threes for the first three games.
Wow.
That was – yeah, so I'm thinking that they're going to be just fine. Like, they just got that bad, you know, performance out of them that way. And it wasn't a bad overall performance, just from the three. And I think that they should, you know, they should get it done. But as far as the game at hand, Kansas had like a slight lead for a good chunk of this game, including the second half, and then Duke would sneak up and grab it by one. And Kansas would maybe even it out, take the lead, and then Duke would grab it up again. And so it was kind of back and forth that way. It did feel like the way Duke was closing that they were going to get the job done. They got a couple of point lead, which is, as we know, it's a cushion, but it's not that comfortable of a cushion. You know what I mean? It's not soft and puffy and all that. It's kind of like, well, you got a couple points. You know, you got to keep pushing here. You got to keep your offense going. And as we know, that's one of the most, I'd say, one of the most, especially if it's your squad, your team, you're watching it. I'd say basketball-wise, that can be a, it can just be like, it can just piss you off. It could just—it's not the top thing. Obviously, sometimes flopping or a guy who takes a charge when clearly he's moving, but he's done it for so many years, and the refs just give it to him—that stuff's irritating, no doubt about it. That's more irritating. And that one thing I'll say—I'm on this weird rant all of a sudden. When did college basketball turn into the NBA on steroids when it came the last minute in reviewing plays and games and touches and all that? Oh my God. This year for the NCAA tournament is by far the worst I remember ever. I mean, you kind of get used to the NBA because of the flagrant fall thing. And is it a extra flagrant? I don't know. We'll see the intent. Let's look under the hood for 10 minutes. You know, you get used to that a little bit. And I do like it. Once again, if it's your squad and the ball went on, you know, on the other guy, they should check it. There's no reason why they shouldn't check it under a certain amount of time. I get that. But I noticed this year, it's just like, dude, what the hell is going on? Anyway, one of my bigger pet peeves is, and now I lost my whole point. Completely lost my whole point, Marshall. Oh, yeah, yeah. One of my biggest pet peeves when you're watching your squad is the prevent offense that happens in basketball sometimes where you're like, guys, you haven't won the game. What are you doing? Like, run your offense. And then it got really like a stale offense for Duke, and your guy Grayson is breaking down a defense when there's so much talent around him. And I kind of feel like Duke just choked their moments away. If you look at all these young dudes, a lot of them shot pretty well. Duvall, 9 of 16. Trent Jr. had a good game. Bagley only took 9 shots. It's an overtime game, Marshall. He took 9 shots. He was 5 of 9. But Grayson Allen, 3 of 13 and 2 of 9 from the three-point line. Obviously, he faltered down the stretch. And a guy that we talked about minorly, Malik Newman, as a young player, he's a sophomore. And, you know, Graham, who is now their leader of the team, has been the last 2 years. When he was a sophomore, he went off in the tournament. I think it was a conference tournament near the end of the year. And Newman had really started to show signs at the right time. And, you know, they didn't have their big during that conference tourney. So it was a nice chance for Newman, this guy Malik Newman, to go off and develop. And man, did this guy is so meaningful for them. I mean, he took 12 threes, hit 5 of them, but 32 points, and he really willed his team. But honestly, I can't help to think that Duke, in a sense, I don't know. I hate to say overthinked it, because I don't think it was overthinking. They just got too basic at the end of the game, and they missed shots. And obviously, the guy for the last 4 years, he's done, right? Grayson Allen, he's done, right?
Finally,
yeah. You're like, yeah. So, yeah. So Allen missed a couple of clutch shots. The last shot he took was a tough shot. It was off balance. He had to adjust at the last second too, to the side and put it up, although it was just touching that rim. It was bouncing. I thought it was going to go in. It looked like a shooter's roll. That was not the case. KU gets it done in overtime, 85-81. There is a little bit of history on overtime games going in as you advance the Final Four with an OT win. Michigan State did it in 2015. Wisconsin did it in 2014. I think that was to Arizona. Butler did it in 2011. My point is, no team has ever cut down the nets with having an Elite Eight overtime game, and there's about 12 of them. And this is since 2004. So George Mason and LSU both won in overtime to get – I remember that. Man, George Mason, wow. I still can't believe they beat that UConn team, dude. Man, oh, man, oh, man. Anyway, what were your thoughts on seeing Duke go down like that? It had to have put a little extra pep in your step.
Yeah, I'm never going to shed a tear. I will say that I got to blame Coach K. I mean, how you let the last possession of regulation, and I know he's your boy, Grayson, but just pure idiotic that you don't let the best post player, probably arguably best player in college basketball, not take the shot. That's ridiculous. I mean, as a Bookie, Kansas center's fouled out, and I still don't see how you don't let Bagley take the last shot for the win, because at worst they probably foul him. So, man, it blows my mind. And why you wouldn't do like pick and rolls with Bagley and Carter before he fouled out? Like, I just don't know what the guy was thinking this year. I mean, people give Coach K so much hype, yet this year he basically gave up on teaching his team how to play man-to-man defense. And in their zone against Kansas in the game, basically
well,
all
work,
Kansas
though, to their, it was a smart decision at the time, though, we have to admit, because look where it led. I mean, it did lead
sure
to positive. So,
yeah, I just don't buy into the BS that he was like, oh, well, you know, my guys communicated better in zone. We couldn't talk in man. It's like, well, dude, just say my team's not that good defense. But I think their zone got exposed in the game yesterday, because whenever Kansas would have that Newman guy run off a screen in the paint and kick out to the side, they were getting wide open threes. I mean, almost every shot Kansas got when they set up a play was working. And it seemed to be the same shot every time. It's like curl around near the paint and kick out to the corner, and right or left side every time it worked. And I'm with you, Chris. I really thought that the game was for Duke, because with about 2.5 minutes to go, like with about down to a minute, Kansas had so many wide open threes, and they couldn't hit one to save their life.
Yeah.
And I was like, dude, how many wide open threes can you miss with a Final Four berth on the line and then not kick yourself and still win the game? But they finally hit that one to tie it up. Bagley doesn't touch the ball. I mean, Bagley barely touched the ball in OT. It's just mind-blowing. Of all the love this guy gets, and like, dude, how do you not give Bagley the ball in pick and rolls? It's like, it's mind-blowing. If I'm Bagley, I had to be like, dude, I'm happy to go pro. Like, I mean, they had a good year. Chris, the best player on the court is always going to take always should take the ball at the end of the game. That's why, I mean, whether it's Westbrook or LeBron or Curry/KD or Harden, like, you give the ball to your stud and you let him determine your fate. And I don't care if Allen's been a 4-year senior, the dude ain't Marvin Bagley. So it surprised me. I guess,
and obviously the zone does play into things, though, Marshall. Let's be honest. The zone does play into him touching the ball, because when you have that zone, it's hard to get it to the big. And he's not necessarily a guy that you can get it to right on the elbow and he can just run the offense. So we have to put that in to perspective as far as 9 touches. But as far as overall, yes, I agree with you. Definitely.
Yeah.
But you got to admit, the zone in the big man is a, you know, I can understand why his shots were a little down, but yeah, in the last couple of, You just needed to be better than that on offense. You had to have at least make him a decoy or something and let him crowd him and have somebody open at the three-point line or something.
Yeah, and part of it was, you know, I mean, he was – and since he's gone one and done, since that's kind of become the Duke way, they have one Final Four in 8 years. And next year they have the top three players in the country coming in, and they all play the same position basically as forward. So, I mean, who's the best team next year on paper? Duke. They got the three best players in the country coming their way. But let's see how they mesh together. I mean, it's like he's copying a page out of Kentucky's book, so it'll be very interesting. But Kansas, I mean, they finally hit that clutch three with about 37 seconds to go, and the Duke had that runner. And, yeah, the ball did roll around the rim twice. And, I mean, for that half second, the ball's on the rim. I'm like, oh, my God, if I got to listen to a Grayson Allen Final Four, you know, on the way shot, so I'm happy it rolled out. And after that, I kind of felt that it was going to be KU's game because Duke had their chance there. My quick rant, which I led off the show with talking about making layups, I didn't keep an official tally because I was out watching the game, but Texas Tech had to have at least 9 or 10 dunks/layups missed. If they just make half of those, that game probably comes down to the wire. Now, I want to compliment Nova. That they're a tough, gritty team. They play good defense. You can use all the cliches. They don't give up easy buckets. But, I mean, almost like a third of Texas Tech's shots in the second half, I swore, were within 3 feet of the hoop, inside the cylinder circle, and they couldn't get to fall in. Whether they couldn't draw a foul, the shot got blocked, it rolled off the rim. But, my God, I mean, if you had to watch the film as a Texas Tech coach, you're like, dude, every shot we had was like a fingertip length away from the hoop. All they had to do was finish dunks, and I'm not saying they would have won, but that game would have been down to the wire pretty close. Texas Tech made it respectable, but when you look back as a coach and you're like, we missed how many shots from within like 2 feet? Like, oh, my Lord. Like, no wonder we lost the game. It was just I don't recall many things like it. You know, it's one thing if you're – you know, Duke or Kansas, and you're missing threes, and the three-point shots become so popular now in college basketball. But to miss layup, dunk, layup, dunk, layup, dunk, it's like, my God, I would just be kicking myself if I was a Texas Tech player. Because you mentioned, Chris, Nova didn't have their best shots of the overall, and Texas Tech is known for defense. But, man, that was my main takeaway. It's like, how many layups did they miss? And as a college basketball, I mean, those are shots you got to make. You know, you might be having to jump over a big dude or hands are up in the air, but, dude, going for a contested layup, I'd still take that more out of the time than shooting a three. I mean, the odds are in your favor, but they missed almost all of them. And looking back, that was kind of my main takeaway. To give credit to Nova, and I'll throw it back to you, that team is just so damn pesky. It seems like since they were in the Final Four with Carolina in 2009, that they've been almost good ever since. Or excuse me, when Carolina beat them in 2009 on kind of that travel call back in the day, it seems like since 2009, Villanova's been a legit contender. That was maybe kind of like Jay Wright's coming out party, and the dude's been there ever since. And every time Texas Tech did make a run, despite their missed layups and dunks, in my opinion, Nova always hit that dagger shot. Texas Tech claws it down to five. Boom, Nova hit a three. Texas Tech claws it down again. Boom, Nova makes a dunk. Or they finished their layup, or they did something. And as a Texas Tech fan, you had to be like, damn, can we ever just finish off a run here? But, I mean, he gets his guys. He's not a one-and-done guy. You almost never see Villanova with a lottery pick as a freshman. I mean, he's developed his system. He always has guards that are good. They always seem to make clutch shots. I mean, the only reason I kind of hate Nova is because of what they did to Carolina. But, I mean, just overall respect, they've had as good of a program in the last 6-7 years, Chris, as anyone in the country. And your stat about winning 32 games 4 years in a row, I mean, that is such an incredible compliment to Jay Wright and what the guy does. And I'm with you. They're the team expected to cut down the nets. Nothing's ever, a lock.
Right.
But just another compliment to a gritty-ass team that always hits clutch shots, that always has a pesky guard, that always has an athletic big, and I'm not sounding cliche when I say this. I'm just repeating myself because that's what the team they are. I mean, we could have gone back in podcasts we've done the last couple of years, and you're going to say the same thing about Nova. Great coach, great record, always hits clutch shots, doesn't kill himself. And it's just it's like a hit repeat button. We could probably save the podcast right now with my little rant here and play it again next year, and people wouldn't know the difference, because that's just how the guy rolls. So compliments to them on a good win.
Yeah, and by the way, just to clear up some stuff about Duke and Coach K, I notice how you say, well, you know, a lot of people, we praise this guy and we give all this guy stuff, but this, you can just say he made a bad coaching decision. You don't have to cheapen his pedigree or something like that. I noticed you said, well, there's only been, since 2010, there's only been one Final Four visit, and that is true. However, 2010, they won the championship. And they won it in 2015. So let's just – and then they made the Elite Eight in 2013, 2015, so let's not cheapen Coach K. You can just rip him, and you don't have to say – you know, people praise this guy. He gets all this praise, but what the hell? He could just make a – I remember with that same Nova squad, for good reasons, by the way, I agreed with you, that you were ripping into them as a program because they couldn't get the job done until they proved they got the job done. So I'm not a fan of how you classified that Duke Coach K thing. Just say he needed to do this better. He needed to do this better,
year.
This, that, and the other. But to say we give him all this praise – and he hasn't been to only one Final Four since 2010, but in that year, 2010, they won the championship, and they won it in 2015. So it hasn't been some sort of, you know, meltdown either. You know, they made the Elite Eight two other times. So I'm just saying, just say if he does something wrong, but you don't have to cheapen him.
No, well, then I want ESPN to get – every year they're on Duke's jock about best team in the country, and I've seen that crap 3 years in a row. So if you're going to be labeled the best team in the country and you're bringing in one-and-dones who are the best players in the country, you should make a Final Four. You had the best player in basketball this year, and you lost to a team in Kansas who's the worst team they've had in 7 or 8 years, and they lost to you.
When you say worst team, that's bullshit, though, Marshall. Worst team, that's bullshit. You're talking about talent. You're not talking about college basketball.
Talent.
You're not talking about how you win in college basketball. So that's different.
Okay.
You can't take it out on this win right here.
All right. Well, but if he's the best coach in the country and has all the records and has the best players in the country for 3 years in a row, he should have won one. Just plain and simple. You can't comment at me and tell me he's the best coach in basketball and he has the best people.
So
and
why
ESPN
hasn't
loves
Kentucky,
every year.
Why hasn't Kentucky only won one?
Maybe the one and done theory isn't the way to go. It gets all the hype, but maybe isn't the way to go.
Definitely, but it's not like he's made a career out of it, Coach K. And it's not like every single year, it's just been of late. And they have a damn championship in 2015, so you're acting like I understand ESPN hyping stuff. No doubt about it. I get that. But that's a little different than he can't help that they hype him. It's not him. I'm just saying you cheapen him instead of just pointing out where he went wrong. That's all.
Well, if you're the best coach in the country, which people label him, shouldn't you have gone to more than one Final Four in the past 8 seasons? Isn't that fair to say?
Two of them? He went to two of them as two titles in the past 8. Isn't that fair to say that's decent? I mean, two other times he made the Elite Eight. So that's one step away. He went to overtime to not get to the Final Four this year. So I mean, I hear you. I hear what you're saying. I agree. They go to Bagley more. They should have, no doubt about it. And I agree and I disagree with you on the point of the zone. The zone worked out for him way better, no doubt about it. He's not going to come right out and say, we're fucking garbage at one-on-one. You know what I mean? He's not going to do that.
Yeah,
so that's what you're looking for. No, barely any coach is going to say that in the whole country. So I hear you. I'm just saying, just say what he did wrong in the game. That's all. We don't have to dig into him deeper and add on stuff. Like, he shouldn't – you know, I understand your point about the praise. I get that. I mean, he's been at the same program for how long? Of course he's going to get some praise. But
yeah,
you know, I don't know. I just because the way you shaped it was like, man, this guy gets praised. I mean, he almost basically like for what? Like he, it's just you cheapened it, and then you talked about it rather than just talking about it and say, you know, maybe he's not the best coach in the league or something like that. Either way, you can get your last point, and then we'll just move on.
Yeah, I think if their team next year, if we're having this conversation next year, and he doesn't take it with a three, Barney, maybe it's Carolina part of me, but
I just think his accolades. But I don't think it's a big deal. Maybe it's North Carolina. Come on, dog.
His accolades should be calmed down. That's my take, and I won't change my opinion. But well,
That's a lot different than what you said before or how you stated. So I can understand that, and I can live with that. That's fine with me.
Well, moving on to the weekend, I kind of tipped my hat a little bit earlier. I do think that this Cinderella story does continue. We'll start with the first game of the night first, because of course for ratings, I would say they're doing Kansas Nova second. Probably a smart call there. But even with the we're not going to watch talk. I mean, the Final Four. I mean, I know it's Loyola, but people are still going to tune in. I would say it's basketball and Michigan. I mean, I guess in one way, it's probably good for Loyola. You're playing one of the most popular colleges in North America, for whether it be, or I should say U.S., for whether it be sports or academics or alumni. I mean, they're playing a team that people either hate or probably truly love. So, I can't say on X's and O's that Loyola's a better team. I mean, the way Michigan's on a run, but I think I'm kind of playing with the Cinderella angle of, dude, this team's just going to keep rolling. I mean, they dispatched the K-State team, who defensively, I would argue in my mind, is probably very, very close to Michigan's skill. I guess I don't have the stats in front of me, but from watching, I mean, on my own eye test, K-State's defense wouldn't be ashamed about. And Loyola basically torched them. And I don't know. I guess I'm just going off the Cinderella roll of it. And I think they're probably the way they're playing, they're probably equivalent to Michigan right now. And I'm just taking the underdog, Chris. I'm not saying that might be my pick for the Monday game, which I hope they make, but I'm taking Loyola Chicago. They're riding high on confidence. In close games, they don't seem to be shaken. They probably have more confidence than they even should in their head. They hit those dagger threes. I mean, that three they hit to beat Nevada in the corner with like 8 seconds to go is just so clutch. I mean, when you're up one trying to run out the clock, and we see teams do that so wrong where they'll get off a bad shot or miss the shot clock or put up like a jumper fading away, their point guard drove down, dished out, and just busted a three. I mean, Michigan probably has better people. They got Wagner, Duck, and Robinson, but they can't have the confidence that Loyola does of saying, dude, we don't deserve to be here. Screw what everyone else says. Like, let's go out and keep this ride going. So I'm going to just hop on that wagon, and I think they get it done. And they don't got lottery picks, but they're doing something right, and I'm taking Loyola to keep going.
Team has lottery picks.
No, but Michigan probably has – they probably have an NBA player. You're right. But I would guess that Robinson or Wagner maybe is an NBA guy. Is that fair to say? I mean, I guess I don't know off the top of my head, but – one of them is probably going to be drafted or at least considered.
Yeah, just not a lottery pick.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, fair. So I'm taking Loyola. Are you following with me, Chris, on the journey ride continuing, or do you think the amazing blue put an end to Loyola and St. Jean, the 98-year-old fan that America's – I don't know, some people are probably fed up with it, but I still think it's a pretty cool story.
Doing a bunch of research on North Carolina Final Fours since 2009, and it's kind of weird. I'm only seeing 2016 and 2017. I don't know what happened, but anyway, no, I'm not. I think both of them are. I mean, Kansas State is not they're not as good as defense, in my opinion, in the stats too. Actually, both Chicago, Loyola, and Michigan are much better defensive teams nationally ranked throughout the season anyway than K-State. Of course, you know, Michigan had a tougher schedule during the year, you know, of course. I'm not saying that they were like the Big Ten was stacked or anything, but obviously playing in, you know, I just think it's a tougher league than the league they were in. I think that's fair. If, you know, stats could hold up a little better in the Big Ten as far as defense than Loyola. But both of them do, and both of them hit threes. And you're right, that was a clutch three, and I'm pretty sure there was a pretty clutch three hit by a Michigan bench player as well. I can't recall. Was that this year in the tournament? Yeah, it was. It was a three-pointer to win the game. And they didn't play that well in that game. Mr. Poole. And so, no. And by the way, we have a new entry as far as a rallying call, a rallying point. And that is Jalen Rose's 100-year-old grandmother. And as you know, Jalen Rose, part of the Fab Five, or should I say a Fab Four, because Chris Webber doesn't exist, They have a new cheering squad, and she sent a message saying, hey, it's been a great run, you know, that hell of a run, really proud of you guys, but that run is over now. I'm going to cut down, well, I shouldn't say cut down the nets, but they're gonna go by Loyola, but I do think it'll be a fun game, and I think both teams, like I mentioned, they play great defense in the outside shooting that either – that'll just keep them in the game. Similar to what you're talking about Texas Tech in the Nova game, I could see it having that feel where, nope, there they are, and then a three and a two when it's a six-point lead, and then they dig their way back. And I just feel like it's going to be a mid-level scoring game, maybe somewhere in the 70s. I think it's going to be a fun game. I see this being competitive, though. I don't look at it as some kind of walkover or nothing like that. Obviously, the extra games that I mentioned earlier in the, you know, in the broadcast, I think the extra days to study will help, and I think they have the better coach. I think that's three Elite Eights in the last 6 years, two Final Fours in the last since 2013. They went to the final game, you know, in Louisville in 2013. So, I don't think they're as talented as then, but then again, the squads they're playing aren't as talented as maybe what they had to go up against either. That Louisville club had some deep – they had a deep rotation. They had dudes that are playing in the league and yada, yada, yada. But, no, long story short, I'm going with the Michigan Wolverines. And as far as on the other side, somewhat of a – they got to be the 5-point favorite for Nova. Man, according to ESPN's Basketball Power Index, Marshall,
oh,
and you know how we love to break this out.
Yeah.
72.9. Not quite 73% chance for Villanova to win, but 72.9, excuse me. And I just think they're a better defensive club. They're deeper. They're a better defensive club. Villanova, I'm speaking of. Both of them shoot the ball very well from three and just field goal percentage wise. We know that in clutch moments, they're probably not going to sit there and give it to like their third best player, like Duke did. But I'm going Nova to beat the Jayhawks. Something I did mention a couple of times, and we actually just brought it up when we were going back and forth with our banter there. As far as KU, no, they're not as talented, but as far as a college team and what you need and the veterans and all that type of stuff, it's not like they don't have talent, right? I mean, Graham's a stud in college, and the center's pretty solid, I would say. And Graham has really come – or not Graham, but Newman's really come on – to go along with some of the three-point shooting and guys. They are a veteran team is what I'm trying to get at. So
yeah.
in the NCAA tournament, and that kind of goes with what you're saying as far as the one-and-dones or just a young, talented team compared to a team with juniors and seniors, especially experience at the high level, this is a tough-ass game, though. I really like Kansas this year as far as the pieces that they have to win a championship, and it sounds funny saying that. I'm picking Nova, but I wouldn't be shy. This side of the bracket, I guess you could say, someone's going to win the title out of this side. Well, what do you say about this other – speaking of Blue Bloods, obviously Nova – recently entering the Blue Blood section, not quite Blue Bloods in general on the mainstream sports fan, but, you know, like you said, they've been a very winning program, no doubt about it. What do you think about this game here, Kansas and Villanova?
I got to take Nova. I just don't see how this team loses. They're gritty as hell. They get it done. I know that this Kansas team is, I mean, there's something to be said. I've been said throughout the past month, this team has won a lot of close games. They haven't blown many people out, but there's something for their character. And I will say, I'm still not as high as other people, but I do remember thinking that Graham was basically a massively overrated player as a sophomore. But looking back how he's matured now, and I think taking more of a leadership role, which to maybe give credit to him, wasn't available to him as a sophomore because there were people on that team who were NBA players, you know.
Yeah, how is he massively overrated when he's a sophomore with more talented guys on the draft board that year? Help me out.
Well, what I heard about him I thought was over the top for his compliments. Yeah, for people like, well, mainly like announcers during the game. I thought that the compliments they were giving him as a sophomore were overhyped, and I didn't think he lived up to that performance. But as a senior, he and Bill Self's talking a lot, and whoever else has, I think the guy's definitely matured. Maybe he's had more of a role to shine.
Junior and senior, by the way. Cause he's
yeah,
big.
Yeah.
He was good last year.
I just don't see how Nova loses. I mean, I think this, as you mentioned, this is their tournament to win. I'm taking Nova. I would take the spread too. I'd like the 5.5. Maybe I'll have to get in on that. And that would lead me to a Cinderella story coming to an end. I mean, I'm picking Loyola. And
Cinderella
I
story. That.
Yeah. You're Loyola Chicago. You made it to the championship game, and I'm not really a huge fan of runner-up banners, but I mean that's a pretty darn good run.
Definition of moral victories.
Yes, exactly. I mean, you've won. I mean, in my situation, you've won five games. You're facing a team that won the title 2 years ago, I think it comes to an end. But if not. I'll be incredibly excited to do a show Tuesday talking about one of the crazier national champions of all time. I know I remember I've seen the 32
oh,
version
we're doing
of the
it Monday
Bono.
Night. We're doing it Monday
or,
night.
Oh, yeah.
Screw
yeah,
Tuesday.
Yeah, yeah.
We're doing it Monday night if Loyola Chicago wins, dude. We got to get on those lists.
You're right. You're right. Absolutely. Yes. Damn straight. So we'll see. We'll see. But I do think – and I know they don't quite get the hype as much as Duke, Carolina, Kansas, Kentucky, whoever, because they are kind of hidden in Philadelphia or Pennsylvania.
Oh, why would they? Oh, you're talking about Nova. I thought you were talking about Loyola. Like, what the hell are you talking about? Yeah, okay.
No.
That's true.
But, I mean, dude, since 2009, I mean, every year, I'm not a diehard Nova, but I would assume they've made the tournament the past 10 or 11 years, and I would think that's right. Maybe they had one break there in a second, but dude, I don't know. Two titles in 3 years, that's pretty darn good run. So I think this will be a compliment to Jay Wright, and I know they're not quite as like four guard, one big heavy as they used to be, but that dude just has a way of bringing in people with those, like, crazy long, like, Italian last names or hard to pronounce, and all those guys do is bust dagger threes. So I'm gonna tip my hat to Loyola. And hypothetically, my best scenario, Chris, in my opinion, would be to have a Kansas Loyola title and Loyola win. Oh my God, we're doing a show Monday if that happens soon. That'd be even more exciting. Oh, if Kansas could lose to Loyola, oh man, I would be jumping up.
If Loyola wins the tournament, we're doing a show on Monday night. Period. I'm doing a show Monday night. I don't know if you're calling in, but I'm doing it. For sure.
My excitement level would be much higher if they beat Kansas. I'll just say that. It would be through the roof. I mean, I'll give them massive compliments.
I can't believe that. I don't understand why that would be. I can't hear it through the phone. Real quick, this one's for Loyola.
Well, you got all of that. The crowd is standing on his feet here at Augusta. The normally reserved Augusta crowd. Going wild.
Cinderella story. Tears in his eyes, I guess. Now, that would be awesome, though. That would be freaking phenomenal. But you're picking Nova to win it all, right? As am I.
Nova to win by, like, 9 or 10 against Loyola.
All righty. So let's wrap it up. We'll go to the NBA in a second. So in that same amount of time about Duke, and I won't do what you did. I'll back it up to 09 because I'll give you another championship. But you said since 2010 that Duke has only been in the Final Four twice. Well, you said once, but twice, really, because if you say 2010. I guess you could say 2011 at that point. Then that would add to one Final Four. But since that same amount of time, though, Duke's only been to two Final Fours. Or, I'm sorry, North Carolina has only been to two Final Fours. And the same amount of Elite Eights. Well, is your system not work then, or what?
No, but I wouldn't
say
Roy Williams
doesn't get praised. Somehow he came out
unscathed
from a fake class at his university that he's been out since early 2000s.
I mean, Roy's a great coach, but he does not get, in my opinion, the praise that Coach K does, no. I mean, he's phenomenal, but I would still say that a majority of people in this country put K above him, yes.
Which, obviously, you know, Duke wasn't shit until he got there. That's why,
Yes. I won't deny that at all.
He's kind of cherry-picking in North Carolina. No, I'm just kidding. I wanted to get something out of that. Because, you know, as we know, a couple years before that, before Roy, the shit was ugly. And actually, there was I don't know how – you probably wouldn't be doing the show during that year you guys didn't make the tournament. But anyway, NBA. NBA basketball. You love it. You got to love it. By the way, UConn is up 76-47 at the end of the third. Kind of weird to say that, but that's how it goes when it comes to that, too.
When I was watching the – I think it was the Sunday night – or no, Saturday night, I was getting ready to leave from Nashville. I went on that damn 6 a.m. flight. But I believe a buddy of mine told me, who was I believe so at the time, that in that opening weekend, there was a game UConn played where their women scored 99 points in the first half. I can't verify that, but I'm almost certain. And like, it would have been UConn's, I guess, second game of the tournament. They had 99 points in the first 20 minutes. I maybe should have fact checked it, but again, I don't know why he would make it up and have such a misread it stat, but I believe that was in that's what 99 points in 20 minutes. And I was like, oh my Lord, are you allowed to retire and throw in the towel like you do in boxing? Like, dude, we're not coming out of the second half. We're good. We're throwing in the loss and we're going to go back to our hotel and fly home and pretend like that game
points.
Never happened.
94 points.
Oh,
yep.
My
I just God. Looked it up. Record breaking. Obviously, record
Jesus.
Breaking. 94. It was 14 points more than 31 years ago, Long Beach State. That's the last time anyone had that. It was 94-31.
94 points in 20 minutes. If you gave someone a basketball and said you can't shoot layups, but I want you to score 100 points in 20 minutes. I mean, dude, your jumper's got to be dropping that day. I mean, that ain't exactly. And not to mention, there's five people on the court trying to stop you, in theory. Wow. All
right.
Right.
In
I said
theory.
That in theory. Man, all right. I heard you say that. I had to mention them, but we moved on to NBA. But 94 points. Oh my God. What a game. I guess maybe there is a point shaving scandal that'll be broken years to come down the road.
Man, that's a heck of a bet, though, dude, isn't it? Like, all right, so what's the spread? Oh shit! So we got to do. What are we gonna do in the first half? Oh man, this is gonna be tough. Like you said, it's almost not a points, you know, shaving situation because it's hard to say, hey, go out and put up 90. You know what I mean? Like, it's even with the ball, like you said, the example you said, that's gonna be tough. Like, your elbow might be sore, your shoulder might be, you may be sore trying to shoot all those shots. Just to get up to that level. But yeah, that's pretty funny. That's pretty funny. So as far as the NBA, nothing really changed too much in the East, per se. LeBron is just devouring people at this point. He's basically doing dunk contest dunks in the games over and over. Not long ago, he became the only player in the last 35 years to get 35 points and 15 assists with zero. That's right, I said it, zero turnovers.
Wow.
Now you're starting to see, yeah, now you're starting to see, you know, teams qualify technically for the playoffs. The Spurs actually now are technically in the actual playoffs, right? So they, or I'm sorry, this is a winning record. This is a different stat, the winning record. So they've had this is an NBA record, 21 consecutive winning seasons. Only five teams accomplished that feat across all four major sports, too. So that's like a different ball game right there. So that's just kind of adding on to, you know, what else, you know, what's been a great run for them in general. I guess the only thing you could really say is that back-to-back type of thing. And Houston just actually tied the record. They probably beat it by now. I didn't check. Tied the they had 58 wins. They won 31 out of the last 34, but they tied the franchise record set in 93-94. The year, you know, Michael decided to play baseball. Kind of random there, but you know, the West obviously still is tight, and now it's starting to – you're starting to see the parameters kind of zoom in a little bit more. It does now look – now it's – there's plenty of games left and some time left, but it does look like Portland has that third spot now. It's only two games, which is a lot – or not a lot, but considering the opponents that OKC, New Orleans, San Antonio have to face, I think they got the third spot. I think that's safe. I think it's safe to say that Houston has the number one spot, which I guess you probably couldn't even say that last week per se, but it was starting to look like that for sure. Now it's a done deal.
Yeah.
5.5 games. They're not going to do it. They're not going to do it. But now it's coming down to the fourth spot to the ninth spot. There's a three-game separation there. Denver is just on the outside looking in at 40-33. They do have a couple more games coming up than other people. Then you have Utah and Minnesota tied right now, 42-32, tied for 7th and 8th. San Antonio sitting at with New Orleans at 43-31, tied, right? And then OK City's at 44-31. So as you can see, it's really not that far. I mean, technically, you know, if Jimmy Butler – well, first of all, if Jimmy Butler was playing, I doubt the Wolves would be in the 7th spot. I think they'd still be in the 3rd or 4th spot. That said, though,
agreed.
I'll say this. I still think any of these teams could jump up on the 4th spot for a couple reasons. The main reason why is because of what I mentioned about Portland having a little comfort zone there is the schedule that OKC, New Orleans, and San Antonio have to face. Now, Minnesota does have to face Utah once and Denver twice. So Minnesota head up against Utah, that would be big. But they have to win one of the Denver games is what it comes down to. There's a game and a half from that tied for 7th, 8th spot down to that 9th and not getting in spot. The Clippers are pretty much falling off with an extra game now beyond that. But you can't say they've fallen off, you know, per se, because, you know, like I just mentioned. So it's still heated, I would just say, from the 4th to 9th spot now in the West, which is still pretty damn cool. And like I said, it is coming down to the wire. I think as far as we'll talk about our clubs that we cheer for. Obviously, Minnesota still playing back and forth ball. They won two in a row, and then the second half, Philly just turned it up. Philly's a different club at home, as are the Timberwolves, actually. They're a different club at home compared to how they play on the road. But Embiid had this moment where he swatted what looked to be an attempt at a dunk, or at least going hard to the rack from Towns, swatted him, went down there and clutched the ball on a dunk. Just they took it over in the second half. Philly played great ball down the stretch. And they're in the 4th spot, which is kind of crazy to say. They are they're right neck and neck with Indiana. But to see Philly, you know, trust the process all this time, it's really paying off for him. And like I said, Fultz is actually playing. And you just wonder what they're going to do with him. If some of the guys that they've had that, you know, it's amazing how Philadelphia has had this red shirt year for their freshmen. Their rookies, I should say. It's unbelievable. I mean, how can you get this many of them? It's crazy how this has happened to them. How they get a guy. He's got some potential, some of them through the roof, the last two that they drafted through the roof potential, right? Or last two and three, not the last one. I shouldn't say the last one because we don't even know about him besides his jumper is not a thing of beauty. That's for sure. And I might be able to block that thing. He puts it so damn low, his release. I kind of feel bad for the guy, though, in a sense, because you're just like, wow, dude, this could really mess up your whole career. I don't even know what's going on with him. But it's really crazy that they have such this red shirt rookie year that's paid off for him though. But man,
yeah.
Philly, it's good to see Philly in the 4th spot like that after years and years of, you know, trusting the process and looking like you're just out there trying to lose. But you know, it's this red shirt rookie thing is really crazy. But from a homestead, I'd say Minnesota wise, we're hoping to get Butler before the end, the season ending, just to get some rust off, and obviously to help us win some games. These next five games, including tonight at Memphis, which is going on right now, I feel like they got to win the next four games. I really do. I feel like they got to win the next four games, and then, like I said, split with Denver, and so we'll see how that goes. It's not easy to win on the road no matter who you're facing, but some of these are going to be at home and they just got to get the job done. But yeah, they're definitely in and out, look good for two games, then look bad, then look good. Then they're very inconsistent, which isn't a huge shock. Butler, but it does sound like he's going to be back before the end of the season, like I mentioned. As far as the Golden State Warriors, we talked about, you know, odds are if you look at the timeline, they're going to be able to get, and this is last week we're talking about. If you look at the timeline, it looked like they were going to be able to get their talent back before the playoffs or right on the edge of the playoffs, but before the playoffs, I should say. But that's no longer the case. In the first game back from an ankle thing, Curry got ran into by his own guy. It actually kind of did what Butler did in a sense. There was some contact on this one, but same type of feel to it, where it's not a tear of an ACL. It's not the worst thing. It's not the ankle, but it is a sprain that's going to take some time. And Kerr recently came out and said, I don't even think we'll see him in the first round. Now, Klay Thompson's injury is on his shooting hand, right?
Yeah, I would imagine,
thumb?
Yes. I guess
I think it's his thumb. I believe so, right?
I thought as he broke a finger. I mean, I guess they could classify
fingers
as thumb, but
technically.
Yeah,
I got five fingers. We all know it's thumb.
Yeah. I guess I'm not 100% sure. I just knew a broken finger out in roughly 2 weeks. I guess I didn't know any more, but I would assume shooting hand, yes. I'm not 100% though, to be honest. I don't know.
Really shows you how much you care about your team, dude. I mean, now you just don't care. You just love Curry and hate. You got love and hate. That's all you got now. It's a fractured thumb.
Okay.
Fractured thumb, and he should be back. Well, we'll see.
He should be back pretty soon, in theory. It's always better to play safer than dangerous. Someone tweeted, I forget who it was, but someone was writing an article talking about something about how the Golden State, you know, these injuries are showing a cause and effect of having a great run for 3 years in a row. And they mentioned that with Kyrie's injury, too. It's like, dude, Kyrie and Golden State and Cleveland have basically been on a war path for 3 years in a row, and injuries are kind of due to happen, which I think is pretty darn true. Now, obviously, some of that's wear and tear. Some of injuries is risk, bad luck. I mean, if McGee doesn't fall on Curry's leg, he probably doesn't sprain his MCL. But,
yeah,
you know, the wear and the tear matter, which ultimately give LeBron such a massive compliment. The dude's got to be a robot. He's been to 7 straight finals, and the dude doesn't miss games. I mean, he'll take games off because he's occasionally tired. And he even got flat for that last year for taking like a couple off. I mean, the dude's just, it's insane how his body's just, it literally is like bionic. But for Golden State, yeah. I mean, not having Curry in round one.
He spends $1.5 million to maintain his body every year. Just a quick little note. I saw it on Twitter. Go ahead.
That's a good $1.5 million.
Money well spent.
That's a good million. Yes, because he's making up for that easily. That's a splash in the pond for what his overall value is. But, you know, not having – if we don't have Curry round one, I mean, I'm not saying that's ideal, but I would think we could get by in round one, although in credit to your boys, the Wolves have played the Warriors.
What about the T-Wolves, dog?
I know.
What about the T-Wolves? We get Butler back, no Curry.
If you got Butler back. You know,
We just beat you at home without our guy, too.
And then it turns into the freaking KD show. And I know he's a great player. One of the best scorers of all time. But when it turns into the KD show in playoffs, I prefer to be the Steph
like
and
the
KD
NBA
show.
Finals? Yeah, it was. That was the KD show. You're right, the NBA Finals.
So
no, I'm just kidding. I was there with you on the MVP thing, too.
But again, better safe than sorry. Klay should be back soon. Draymond still icing his midsection. He should be back soon.
I like how you put that. He's icing his midsection.
a pelvic contusion, my lord. But I think the Dubs will be okay. But again, we could make predictions for seedings, but no one still knows. And again, I did it. I think I've done the last two shows. Compliments to freaking Portland. I mean, I like that team. They're probably my second favorite team in the West. I mean, they've always been a fun team for me to watch, but no one thought they would do this. I mean, for the last couple of years, people in the media, just almost everyone, and I don't like to use that term wrongly, but almost every NBA person I ever listened to said that you'll never succeed with Lillard and McCollum in the backcourt together because they're too short and they're not that good defensively. It won't work. And I'm not saying that Portland's going to win the West because I don't think they could, but for the year they're having in the West, I mean, I think people got to finally maybe shut up and say, wow, this is a GM that really knows what he's doing. Maybe people can realize how great of a coach Terry Stotts is, but for all the naysayers, finally be like, dude, maybe McCollum and Lillard can play together. And this is a team that has made a lot of changes in the last 2 years to their roster and brought in a lot of people.
See, that's where I think it's key. They've added a lot of role players and some of them defensive to help out with those guys because neither are known for being defensive-minded because your teams wouldn't be garbage at defense a couple years ago or actually just last year and the years before if your star lead players aren't defensive-minded, though. You know what I mean? So they have added some pieces to help with that defense.
I think that Lillard and McCollum have improved. Now, I'm not, you know, they're never going to be considered locked down, but you can see progression in NBA players defensively when the effort is there to be put in. You know, I think a guy like Harden, he's not locked down, but I would say that he has made improvement on the defensive end of the court massively compared to where he was 3 years ago. And part of it, those guys simply is a guy like Harden or Lillard. It simply is putting in the extra effort because those guys do kind of max out all their energy and effort on offensive side of the court, but an extra effort to be that team leader, I think defensively, but you know, I'll stop. I got to get.
Or your help defenders help you and you don't look as bad 14 times
true.
A game, only 12 times, you know? So I think that plays into it too with Harden.
Yeah. But you know, I think it'd be interesting. It'd be cool for them to make the second round, but again, who knows? I mean, it could be Minnesota Golden State round
one.
What's
Boogie's excuse then? What's Boogie's excuse? You know I had to bring him up.
It's hard to be successful in Sacramento.
Is he playing basketball on the defensive side? I'm just kidding.
It was hard to be successful in Sacramento, but I think that he made strides through moving. It's not gigantic, but I mean, I wish he was healthy because I would love to have seen that team with him in the playoffs. Now, I still think they're going to make it, but you've seen the effect of the Anthony Davis MVP insane video game stat runs kind of come to an end. As you mentioned I believe they've been 500 for the past like week and a half. I mean, they're going to make it, but when it does come to playoff time,
they're still in a much better spot though than they were with him.
Yeah. Having the lockdown, just Anthony Davis compared to him and Boogie. I mean, they were a team that gave Houston fits. I'm not saying that, again, I would bet Golden State – or, excuse me, I would bet New Orleans to beat Houston, but they're kind of like the almost the opposite of the way a team's built. It's like, you know, New Orleans was
They would have had to make the playoffs, though, in that situation because most of the time they weren't in playoff contention, even though they could match up with, like you're saying.
Yeah,
you're right,
so,
though. Building it from the inside like that, you never see that now. It's just it's weird to see.
Yeah, right now I get in that mode usually of like I kind of get of, you know, just let's just get to the playoffs. I mean, we basically know the teams that are in. I mean, I know the East has seeding movements to go, but I believe the team in it, like the ninth seed in the East, like 6 or 7 games back. So, I mean, the East is set. I think it would be fun to see a Cleveland-Washington round one. For all the LeBron doubters, though, I did catch a game a couple days ago, and it was Toronto and Cleveland. And Cleveland won. So, I mean, how many more times can this guy just do it with basically whoever is a teammate?
They were down by like 20-something, weren't they?
I saw the end of the game, brother. I'm not sure. I know they won. It won't surprise me. But I mean, for all the years, we're like, you know, LeBron, he doesn't quite have the boys. And it's like, he's like, dude, I don't care about the boys. As long as I'm on the court, I'll make my boys good. And my last NBA news is the Spurs and this unknown mystery about really what's going on with Kawhi. I believe he's pretty darn healthy or cleared to play or very close. But then when I was earlier this week, I saw that Manu Ginobili comes out on record and says that, dude, he ain't coming back this year. And that dude's kind of like, you know, like one of Popovich, you know, almost like a second or third voice for the team. Because it's him and Duncan and Ginobili and Parker. And so when Ginobili said Kawhi's not coming back this year, and apparently he had a meeting with Popovich a few days before, I mean, I know they're
a well-run
organization.
Yeah, he said the mindset is I'm not even thinking about him coming back. That's what he said. He didn't say he's not coming back, but yeah, I hear you.
Well, that was –
especially
that
what Pop
was,
said a little bit ago. Pop said
that too, about
a month ago.
That was clickbait then. I guess I could have read the story. But it the way they phrased it in the little tweet I got, it's like, dude, Ginobili's out – or Ginobili said, wow, holy cow. But I'll be very curious to see. Now, again – this is not the regular Spurs team we're used to, but that's because you have a top five player in the NBA that's not been playing, and for some reason he's not super eager to get on the court, which is odd to see in athletes. But I don't know, maybe the theory about how he got led the wrong way by medical people has really caused an irk in him. I mean, maybe
well,
him and Popovich aren't playing.
Well, it's the second time because a while ago this happened too. And then he's now saying there's something wrong with my knee. It doesn't feel right. So, you know, I can't really blame him if a year and a half ago they screwed up on, you know, something. And then this time they're like, he's not feeling right. So I don't know. And the crazy thing is they okayed him how long ago? I mean, that was a while ago. He came back and looked right. And so it's like, you're saying he was okay then. That's kind of weird. Like, clearly he wasn't okay then. I'm sure he's thinking about the rest of his career too, you know? It is a weird you never hear this type of stuff out of San Antonio is your overall point, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, and I mean, it's just you want to see the best players compete in the playoffs. I mean, if not for Zaza's dirty move, who knows how last year it goes. I mean, they were housing Golden State by like 24 until the foot slid. So I just hope that being selfish as an NBA fan, I hope to see Kawhi, because I think without him, the Spurs would be in big trouble of winning round one series. And, yeah, but I don't know. It's just it's weird to see a story of San Antonio like that and to see a player who we believe has been told he's allowed to play not being a little hesitant. So interesting. But, again, I'm sure next week we'll still be curious to see who's going to be what seed. I mean, besides maybe Golden State, Houston, Portland in order, nothing else is really set in stone. So, it should be entertaining. And like I said, I hope we do get the Cleveland-Washington round one, because for all the years we've done this show, the first round of the East is like, dude, chalk, LeBron, okay, move on. And we kind of, not that we don't break down the series, but the first round of the East is normally not super entertaining, just because, you know, it's LeBron going to do his thing, and the one seed and the two seed are going to move on. And maybe we talk about Toronto drama, and that's about it. But I think if we maybe could get a matchup of, you know, Toronto being a one seed because they handle the pressure. Indiana had a miracle year this year. Can Oladipo carry them to a win after Paul George left? And LeBron against John Wall. Maybe we got a little setup of more entertainment, Chris, for our first round of the Eastern Conference playoffs, because the West is going to be fun, period. I don't know, whether it's the Dubs playing the Wolves or your team is playing Houston or whatever. The West is going to be fun, but I think, especially with Philly, I think we're going to have a more entertaining first round of breakdown in the East this year, my friend.
Well, I just saw on Twitter, basketball Twitter, that Markelle Fultz attempted his first jump shot after making a layup, and it did not hit the rim. Just reporting. Don't kill the messenger. Anyway... I'd like to see my Minnesota Timberwolves going against Golden State without Curry. No, I actually wouldn't like to see it anyway. To be honest with you, I want the 4th through 6th spot. That's really what I care about now. 4 through 6. Just give me 4 through 6. And give me 7, but don't give me 8. You know, because we just don't match up with Houston. We don't match up with Houston right now. And obviously they're 100%, so that's different.
Yeah.
I'd be saying the top 2. I'm still saying the top 2. Because I don't want to play Golden State either. I don't care if they got Curry or not. I don't want to play them. But, yeah, that's what I'm looking, 4 through 6. You got anything else before we shut this thing down?
No, man, I'm just praying that I get to break down Loyola national title over Kansas. That will be the most
Monday night
energetic podcast I've ever done in my life. And I like to bring it. I love our show. And there's some moments where, you know, we riled up more than others, but – if it is Kansas Loyola, my oh my, that would be something else, brother. I can't wait. But hey, and on a good note, I know I always kind of finished with something serious, that bombing and stuff, that's gone away. The cops found him. It came to an end. Because I remember when we did our show last week, I got a text saying another explosion had gone off, and then about 4 hours later, around midnight, that situation came to an end, which is nice because there's too much negativity going on in the world, so that's why we like doing shows like this to try to block it out and think about basketball. But at least we can say that Mayo issue in Texas has gone away. So.
And by the way, for the record,
yeah,
that's a domestic terrorist. That's what we call it on the show. We don't care what ethnic color you are, whatever. If you're going around shooting the fuck out of people, you're a terrorist. Just want to throw that in there.
Yeah. So we'll be back soon. Hopefully sooner than later. I would love to break down let me ask you one question, Chris, for real. I picked Loyola, and I think their run comes to an end. Do you think Michigan puts up a good fight against Nova, or do you think it's a pretty confident Nova victory?
No, I mean, I guess I could feel a confident victory and still them only winning by 7 or something like that. But
okay.
No, I think the defense, and I just think those threes that they can hit just keeps them in the game. So I could see them playing like Nova, playing like a B-plus, A-minus game, and it's still being maybe not a blowout, but they, you know, you have that feeling, well, they're not going to lose. Kind of like their last game. That was very tight in spots. I never really felt that they were going to lose.
Fair point. Well, on that note, we'll get out of here. The college basketball season of complete craziness has come to an end. It would be the ultimate cap off if Loyola could make the finals. I'd say that's good enough. If they win it, my Lord. We'll see. So until then, Chris and I will be back. Enjoy a good, safe week. Enjoy watching basketball this weekend. It's also opening day baseball Thursday. I got no school Friday. The things are looking up. Things are looking up. So until then, thanks for always listening to the podcast. Chris and I are out. Have a good day. Peace.